Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. NFL Hall of Famer Harry Carson may be best known for his 13 years as inside linebacker with the New York Giants, 10 of them as team captain. His activities off the field are just as noteworthy. Carson suffered 15 concussions in his hard-hitting career and still deals with symptoms from post-concussion syndrome. The author of Point of Attack and Captain for Life, he advocates for concussion awareness. We'll talk with him about life before and after football, and about why he says if he could, he wouldn't do it all over again. Harry Carson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You've suffered at least a dozen concussions in your hard-hitting professional career, and possibly as many as 18 if you count college and high school. In 1990, you were diagnosed with post-concussive syndrome. Explain what that is and how you're doing.
Well, you know, I was having some issues once I transitioned out of football.
In 88,
I started doing CNN, ABC Sports. I was doing college football, and I would lose my train of thought live on the air. Or I would have blurred vision, or I would have any number of things, headaches, you know, bouts of depression. I couldn't really figure out why. And so I went to my family doctor, annual physical. I passed the physical with flying colors, and my doctor asked, okay, everything is okay. Is there any other problems? And I said, no, everything's good. He said, are you sure? And I said, well, yeah, I've been having these issues. And so he referred me to a specialist. I went through 2 days of testing, and the result came back that I had a mild post-concussion syndrome and that it was probably permanent in nature because it had been at least 2 years since I had hit someone or someone had hit me. And so I asked him, you know, will I live? Because I thought, you know, I'd never heard of the condition before. I thought maybe it was something that one of my teammates had had, who I played with. And he said, you can live with it, you just have to learn how to manage it.
And you're referring to a friend who had the same kinds of headaches, but his turned out to be brain cancer.
Yeah, it was Doug Coder, who is originally from Canonsburg,
Pennsylvania,
right outside of Pittsburgh. And that was my concern, that I was dealing with the same thing. And that's why I asked the doctor, will I live? And so he said, you have to manage it. And so over the years, I've learned how to manage it, but I've also paid very close attention to my own body. I've taken part in numerous conferences with the Brain Injury Association. I've sat on panels with some of the foremost authorities on head trauma and neurological disorders and so forth. And I've learned a lot. And so I sort of came to this understanding that if I was dealing with this as a player, there are probably a whole bunch of other players dealing with the same thing. You know, that was more than 20 years ago. And, you know, now there are just so many players who are dealing with the same issues. Guys who I played with, guys who I played against, and so many younger guys who also have had to deal with this issue of traumatic brain injury.
You know, when we think of football, we usually think of injuries below the head. Mm-hmm. And there was a recent survey of former players. 86% of them said that post-play time, they needed orthopedic surgery. Mm-hmm. 3 out of 10 needed 5 or more surgeries. Mm-hmm. So if they're in that kind of physical shape, what kind of neurological shape is the average retired football player in today?
I can't really say, because there are some players who are having some very serious issues. And then there are others who are just sort of tootling along. They're doing very fine. But I think it also depends on what position you play. You know, those who play those contact positions where they're being hit almost on every play, like defensive, offensive linemen, linebackers, running backs, those guys are probably having more problems than the quarterback who might just get hit occasionally, or a wide receiver who doesn't get hit on a regular basis, or a defensive back. So, you know, it sort of varies from position to position, but also from player to player. But, you know, I've seen a lot with guys who didn't get a whole lot of contact, but then they've had problems. Dave Jennings, who was a punter with the Giants, you know, he developed dementia and Alzheimer's. And so you would think that a player who is not involved in a lot of contact probably would not have any issues, but it really does, you know, go right across the spectrum. You never really know who's going to have to deal with it.
We're learning that these subconcussive hits can actually be as damaging. So while it may not register as a concussion, there are studies where they're measuring the impact, and it may be a G8 force, and that person is not, I'm talking about high school students, they won't have passed out, they won't have seen stars, and yet it's the equivalent of a car wreck.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're going to play, you have to understand that those things are going to happen. It's football. And you're going to have to get up, get back to the huddle, and continue to play. Football players have this mentality that if they can walk, then they're going to play. If you have some kind of knee injury or ankle injury or something like that, that's going to impede your ability to be effective on the field, yeah, you come off the field. But if you've been dinged, and if you get your wits about you in time to, you know, for the next play, you continue to play.
You played with blurred vision yourself.
I played not necessarily knowing what the defense was, and I was calling to play, you know. But that's all a part of the game, and unfortunately, you sort of have to deal with the results of what you've done, you know, later in life. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I've been so vocal about this, because when I played, nobody told me that these things could happen. And because nobody told me, I feel that it's incumbent upon me to tell other people more precisely, the parents of young kids who may not necessarily know what they're signing their kids up for.
You know you might break a leg. You know you may dislocate a shoulder.
Everybody understands that when you play the game, that you are putting yourself at risk physically. But no one stops to think about the neurological risk that you have to assume when you step on the football field. And that's where we are now.
And the NFL has acknowledged that 30% of players will receive some neurocognitive impairment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've acknowledged it. And, you know, 24 years ago when I first was diagnosed, and then when I first started talking about it, I thought, they'll never admit it in my lifetime. And so they've admitted it, and I'm pleased, but I think that with that admission, I think parents need to understand more clearly what they're signing their kids up for and what the NFL has said. I mean, they've agreed. You know, 1 in 3 players will sustain some kind of brain trauma that they might have to deal with for the rest of their lives.
You have said that the NFL's suit settlement for $765 million is 765 million reasons why you shouldn't play football.
Mm-hmm. And now that figure is uncapped. And so now the NFL has given everybody an uncapped reason. In essence, you can't even put a dollar figure on it. A reason why you don't want to play football. And I'm not telling people not to, but I'm just saying you really should pay attention to what's going on, because there is a cause and effect here, and players who have played a game, not even on the NFL level, are dealing with mild neurological problems as they get into their 30s if they played high school and college football. But most of the attention is focused on the NFL player, 40, 50, into their 60-year range. So, you know, you have to pay attention to what's going on.
There are more than 8,000 retired NFL players at this point. More than 4,500 have signed on for this lawsuit. You're not one of them, despite post-concussion syndrome. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Well, I know what I have, and I know what I've been living with, but I also know that it was incumbent upon me and a few other guys who have been diagnosed to share our stories, whether it was with Congress or with the media or whatever. We needed to share our stories. And so I've done that. And the reason why I wanted to not be a part of the lawsuit is once I sign my name, people will say, well, the only reason why he's doing it is because he stands to benefit financially. Well, I have no beef with the NFL. I work very closely with the NFL. I work very closely with the New York Football Giants. But I am who I am, and I know what I know. Nobody's going to shut me up from saying what needs to be said. Now, I'm not necessarily going to impose what I feel on you, but if you ask me, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to be very open and honest with you if you ask. If you want a truthful answer, I will certainly give you the truth as I know it.
And your truth is, and in fact, you listened to Deacon Jones mm-hmm. give an acceptance speech. I think he was inducted into the Hall of Fame same time as you.
No, he was inducted a few years before me.
Okay, yeah. And he got up and said, despite all of his injuries and despite all of his problems, he said, I loved it and I would do it all again.
Yeah.
And you were in the midst of repeating what he yeah. said and realized, if I could, I wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
You really wouldn't do it all over again?
Being in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you're around many of the great players, and those great players have absolutely no regrets. And so when they get up and they talk about the game, they say it, and you could feel their passion as they're talking about it. And they'll say, you know, I played the game, and there's nothing that I would do differently, and I'd do it all over again. And I sort of fell into that mold of trying to follow them. Yeah, I love the game too. And then I thought to myself, would I do it all over again?
I thought, knowing what you know now?
Knowing what I know now? Oh, hell no. And so, you know, I had to respect the opinions of other people. I know they love the game and they do it all over again. But for me, knowing what I know, I would not have played the game. And I'm firm with that. I don't say that to get headlines or anything like that. But, you know, this is just me, any smart person who can see that there was something that created a problem for you later in life, would you do it all over again? It really is not worth it to me.
The interesting thing about your story is that it was football that allowed you to get a bachelor's degree mm-hmm. in education from the University of South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then you went on to get a master's degree. So by the mm-hmm. time you did all this, you had so many options. Mm-hmm. And your reality may be so different than it is for lots of other people who go through college but really don't get an education.
Well, I was fortunate in that I had people who pulled for me to get an education. I had a lot of training in football, but also ROTC. So if I had not gone into football, I probably would have been career service.
A pilot, you
yeah.
said.
And I always had this fascination with flying. And I was from an Air Force family. My older brothers both were in Air Force. But, you know, football sort of came calling. And so I played the game. Now, football gave me the opportunity to do some of the things that I've done. But in retrospect, I've always considered myself a pretty smart person. Perhaps I could have gotten my education in some other
way,
perhaps GI Bill or, you know, as a result of the military experience or whatever. You know, it is what it is. I played football and here I am.
And you're emphatic that your grandson will not play football.
I am so emphatic, I am 110% certain that he will not play. If I have to pay for his education myself, he will be going to college. He's only 4 now, he'll be 5 in October. He will not be playing football to have to earn a scholarship to go on and get a higher education or to go, you know, hopefully one day go to the NFL or anything like that. I've already done that. Okay, we don't need anyone else to.
In the Carson family.
Yeah, we don't need anyone else. I've got a Hall of Fame bust, and, you know, we can put somebody's picture on my bust, and there you go. But I know what it took to get there, and I certainly would rather my grandson excel academically rather than athletically.
Is there anything that the NFL, the NCAA, Pee Wee coaches, high school coaches can do to make the risk of the game acceptable?
I think that the game is what it is. But in terms of trying to make the game safer, and I know the NFL is trying to make the game safer. I think the NCAA is trying to make the game safer. But it is the very nature of the game. It's contact. It's about power. It's about speed. It's about guys, you know, colliding with one another on the football field. That's what fans like to see, and that's the way that the game is going to continue to be played. It's a physical game, and if you're not going to be physical, then you shouldn't play.
You caused some concussions.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious of what your approach was to hitting other players.
Well, it was my job to hit players, whether it be, I was trained, you know, from the first day I stepped on the field, you know, how to use your forearm to hit an offensive lineman right in the face and get him off of you and get to the ball carrier and make the tackle. And so I became very proficient in doing that. I was pretty good at what I did. I became known as one of the hardest hitting linebackers in the National Football League. So, you know, I took great pride in that. But then with the Mike Webster situation, then it became abundantly clear to me that I probably that I contributed to many of the issues that he had post football, and ultimately he passed away as a result of a heart attack. But you know, I felt saddened because I felt that the way that I played the game against him,
in particular,
because Mike was known as the strongest guy in the National Football League. And so I had to meet force with force. And so as I was, ball would snap, you know, he'd come to block me. I'd hit him in the forehead, in the head with my flipper. And, you know, that took a toll on him, you know, later in life. And so in some ways, you know, I'm really saddened by that, but I also feel that I contributed in some way. But if I was to ask Mike or talk to Mike, he would say, Harry, I'm proud of you. You played the game the way it's supposed to be played. That's the kind of guy that Mike Webster was.
Interesting thing about the Pittsburgh Steelers is, in terms of their approach to concussions, they're more traditionalists. You get back in there and play. Mm-hmm. And that's in contrast to the Green Bay Packers, who are more inclined to say, if you're concussed, sit out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, is that changing, and is it different from franchise to franchise?
Well, it's out of the hands of the team now, because there are independent neurological specialists on the sideline to examine players. So if they've sustained some kind of ding and they're examined, if that specialist deems that they should sit out, then they're going to sit out. It really doesn't matter what the coach says.
But they hide it. You know, as you know,
players want to play. Players want to play, and, you know, they also know that once they've been diagnosed, that's sort of like the opening salvo to, okay, you're damaged property. When the off season comes, we're going to have to find someone else who has not been damaged. And so that's like if you pull a player out and he can't play, what he's going to think about is, I won't have enough information on a tape to show to a coach coming by who can give me a scholarship. These kids in high school, they want to go to college and they want to play on the collegiate level and eventually, hopefully for them, get to the NFL level. And so, you know, once they're diagnosed and they're held out, it's like being stabbed in the heart. You know, they really, really, really want to play.
You were very, very intimidating on the field. In fact, one person...
I was a nice guy. I was really a nice guy.
But if you knock someone down, you weren't wasting energy helping a guy back up. I'm just wondering, how difficult was it to leave that aggression on the field? And mm-hmm. I ask that because of the scandal that is exploding within the NFL right now. Ray Rice mm-hmm. and Adrian Peterson, and I could go on and on.
I think that in order to leave it on the field, you have to, let me just back up for a second. I probably never should have played football because my mindset was never that of a football player. I've always been a gentle soul. I wouldn't hurt a fly. And so when I started playing football, I had to flip a switch and be able to bring out that aggressive side Otherwise, you're not going to last
be
very
successful.
Long. Yeah. And so when I played, I learned that I needed to flip that switch when I stepped on the football field, whether it's listening to the national anthem or whatever. When I put the helmet on, then I'm ready to go. When the gun sound or when the whistle blew, double zeros on the clock, then I have to let it go and I have to leave it on the football field. But I can clearly understand how some players bring what they learn on the field, what they've been trained to do
home.
Because when you're playing high school ball, it's a certain speed. When you're playing college ball, that speed is increased significantly. When you get to the NFL, you're like on a supersonic speed. And running a 4.3 or 4.4 or 4.5, you know, that is what you measure players by. And so you have to be fast and you have to be quick, but you have to make snap decisions. You have to make a decision within a fraction of a second, not a second. Otherwise, that player is gone.
And it may be that fraction of a second
right.
that results in you pummeling a wife
yeah. and
or
so
a girlfriend.
When you find yourself in a situation that it starts to escalate with arguing or whatever, you have to understand where you are and what you're doing, and you have to make a conscious decision to back away. Otherwise, if something happens, oftentimes it's like a snap second decision that you've made, in whether it's, you know, hitting your significant other or whatever. But once you make that decision, then you feel guilty about it. And that's one of those deals where football sort of comes home with you, because you have to really be slow to anger, you know, if you're a football player. As a captain with the Giants, that was my job on the football field, to make sure that my guys did not get into altercations and that they were slow to anger in such a way that the team is going to be penalized. But I also encourage the guys who I played with to do the same thing. Be very slow to anger once you step off the football field, because things happen on the field where you have to respond just like that. But off the field, you know, you have to give it a little bit more time to process in your brain before you act on it.
At one time, boxing was the spectator sport. It's mm-hmm. now football. Can the NFL survive this current scandal, or do you think that this most watched sporting activity is in its decline?
I think the NFL will survive. There will always be players who will want to play in regards to the whole concussion issue. There will always be players who want to play. But I also think that the NFL will navigate itself around what is happening. They are masters at that. And so it might take a little time, but they're going to get the guys who are constantly being in the headlines for domestic abuse or even, you know, bullying or whatever. They're going to have to get these guys out of the league and become a more fan-friendly league, a more woman-friendly league, a more kid-friendly league. And they will do whatever they have to do, and this is just my belief, to rectify the problem.
You mentioned earlier when you were talking about post-concussion syndrome and not being able to find the word you needed when you were in the broadcasting booth, and headaches and things like that. You also mentioned depression. Mm-hmm. And even when you played, there were times when you dealt with depression that you kept to yourself, in part because players were traded and they could use that weakness against you. Are players today inclined to keep tight-lipped about depression and aggression problems and those kinds of things that are really troubling them?
I really can't speak for them. I just know how I had to sort of manage my life. I saw what I saw, and I saw that if a player with the Giants, one of my teammates got cut and he went to a team that I was going to play, he was going to spill his guts and tell everything that he knows because he wants to get back at the Giants. I learned just to keep my weaknesses, keep things to myself and not share. And that sometimes that carries over into your personal life. And it can be very difficult when you keep things to yourself and you have a spouse and you don't share certain things with your spouse. And so I'm on my second marriage, just like a lot of other players who may have played in the league, who, you know, once football was over, you know, you had this difficulty making the adjustment. And so I've learned how to just sort of manage my life a certain way. And
is it avoiding stress? What is it that you do to manage this post-concussion syndrome?
For me, I think very clearly about what I do. I think about what I say. I have to analyze every word before I let it leave my tongue and my lips.
Very controlled.
Yeah, I'm very controlled. It's just the way that I cope with being me.
And you also have this experience that I think must be influencing that part of you that's so controlled. You said in the 1980s you were so depressed that you actually envisioned yourself or thought about driving over the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Committing suicide.
Yeah. I was playing the game, and this had to be like 1981, and I was feeling depressed, and I'm thinking to myself, why am I depressed? Why am I feeling like this? Because here I was a football player, I was making nice money, and I had a baby daughter, but yet I would have these bouts of depression where I could sort of feel myself sort of slip into like this abyss, you know, and just sort of wallow there for a while, and then eventually I'd come out. And I lived in Westchester, Ossining, New York, and every day I had to drive across the Tappan Zee Bridge. And so on my way to Giant Stadium, you know, I had thoughts of, you know, what if I, you know, drove off the bridge? What if I accelerated? And I thought about it a few times, and I was like, no, what would happen to my daughter? It came down to my daughter sort of being my inspiration. And so I paid attention to it over the years. And I can remember going to the Giants trainer, Ronnie Barnes, and we had won a game. I think this was 1988, my last year. We won a game. The day after the game, we have to go to the trainer and make sure we're on the injury report. And so I went to Ronnie and I said, Ronnie, I just want to tell you that I'm depressed. And he looked at me and he said, what do you want me to do about that? I said, you don't have to do anything. I'm just sort of putting you on record. And at that point, no one had ever told Ronnie that they were depressed. And so I felt like the whole concussion thing played into the depression. And so whether it was depression, headaches, blurred vision, sometimes I would have twitches in my right arm, and I couldn't figure out, you know, why is this stuff happening? And then I came to understand that it was probably a result of maybe some kind of head trauma that I sustained, you know, playing the game. But you don't put those things together as you're playing.
You know, today, of course, you do.
Yeah.
Harry Carson, thank you so much for talking
with us.
You're quite
welcome.
That was Harry Carson, inside linebacker for the New York Giants from 1976 to 1988. His book, Captain for Life, is his personal account of concussions he gave and received as a football player and his experiences living with the lingering after effects. To hear more of this interview, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.